We've been profiling scientists who explore the natural world by listening to it. We call it close listening, decoding nature through sound. Some scientists find they need to do more than just listen. NPR's Christopher Joyce and audio producer Bill McQuay of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology introduce us to scientists who learn to capture what animals are saying and even talk back to them.
The invention of the phonograph record was a big deal for bird scientists. They could record bird song and then sit down and really listen, figure out how they communicate. Sometimes, anyway.
This is March 1st, 1946.
That's Arthur Allen from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Allen was the lab's founder and one of the nation's leading birders.
We were set up on the shore of Matamuskeet Lake, North Carolina, recording the whistling swans. So they're cold, windy morning, and the recorder is apparently not working quite right, and the needle is jumping, perhaps on account of the cold.
He was trying to actually cut an acetate record of singing birds.
Fortunately, the technology got better and a bit more portable. Let's fast forward 45 years.
Up here in the canopy, there's another flock. These are the hardest birds to detect.
It's 1991, and that's Ted Parker from a field recording of an NPR radio expedition story in a Bolivian rainforest. Parker was an ornithologist with Conservation International. He spent months at a time in the tropics lugging around a portable tape recorder. He had a legendary skill for using his ears.
My parents bought me records of bird recordings that were made by people at Cornell. I can remember hours and hours, you know, just putting the needle back and forth, and my mother would say, you know, you're going to destroy the record player.
Parker memorized the sounds of over 4,000 bird species. He used his tape recorder to do some of the most extensive bird surveys in the tropics.
These birds that spend all their time in that foliage that's 130, 140 feet above the ground. If you don't know their voices, there's no way you could come up with a good list of canopy species.
But Parker wanted more than lists. He wanted to know how birds divide up their territory. And how do you do that when you can't see them?
Here's how. Mating pairs of birds each have their own territory. Parker hit on the idea of provoking mating pairs to reveal themselves and their patch of the forest. He would record a mating pair, then he'd play their song back to them. The birds were confused. They thought it was a threatening outsider.
The other thing is, if you're outside the territory and you play back the song, birds will only come up to the edge of their territory.
And they'd vocalize, in essence shouting, "Hey, get out of here."
It's an antiphonal duet where the male and female are singing different songs. It's a territorial display. See, what I do is I try to arouse them all so that I'll actually get a pair here, a pair there, a pair behind me, and you can map all the territories in the forest eventually.
Parker was doing just such a bird census in Ecuador when he died in a plane crash in 1993. He was just 40 years old.
Years later, a biologist using a similar technique discovered something no one had imagined: how these bird warnings are adopted and passed on by completely different kinds of animals. At his lab at the University of Montana, biologist Eric Green explains how it works. A small bird sees danger, let's say a hawk or an owl flying around. It warns other birds by making a seat call.
Because it sounds like this.
Then there's a mobbing call. Green demonstrates by pressing his lips to the back of his hand. Birds make that call when they see a perched predator. It brings other birds out of the trees to mob the predator and chase it away. Now, Green had watched birds do this for years. Then one day he noticed something, well, squirrely.
We mean that literally.
He realized that squirrels seemed to be mimicking these warning calls from birds as soon as they heard them, almost exactly, even with a totally different vocal apparatus. And chipmunks did it too. Green was astonished that mammals and birds would share this early warning system.
We've got these complex, what we call communication networks, and it's not just one species yakking to members of its own kind. It's all these different species, not only of birds, but mammals as well. And they're all sharing information.
Being a scientist, Green had to observe this happening to be sure of it. At his lab, he shows me how he does that.
Let me take you down the hall and I'll show you some more of our roboraptors.
Roboraptors, mechanical birds of prey.
And so this is going to be a robo pygmy owl.
Green holds a dead owl. It's stuffed with small motors and a computer board that make it move. These are Green's villains. He takes them into the forest to set off this alarm system.
I went with Green to the woods near Ithaca, New York, to see how he uses those roboraptors. He has to hide them at first inside a fake tree trunk 2 feet high. He can then raise and lower the trunk with a remote control.
So this is neat. See, we've walked out with this fake tree trunk. Underneath it is hidden a robotic owl, so we're going to be able to lower the tree trunk down with the garage door opener when we're back here, exposing this little robotic owl. And so then we'll be really interested to see how these birds respond to a predator.
A few days later, Green's team had everything in place. They exposed the roboraptor. It didn't take long before a tufted titmouse spotted it and started the mobbing call. Then a white-breasted nuthatch joined in. Then house sparrows. And if that wasn't enough, the jays chimed in. And just as Green has now observed numerous times, the squirrels got into the act. It's a madhouse.
Birds, squirrels, chipmunks, they all propel these warnings through the forest at, says Green, 100 miles an hour.
It's almost as if there's a bow wave preceding the raptor. So in many ways, I've become to appreciate that it's hard to be a hawk.
Close listeners like Green are, in a way, hearing the world as other animals do.
And finding that it's a world in a constant state of negotiation, across species, everywhere there's life. I'm Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
And I'm Bill McQuay.